Without a referee, there's no game. And today on the Champions Rugby Show, we pay homage to that. Our guest is not a player and he's not a coach, but when this man speaks, you certainly listen.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
That is very embarrassing and it is not needed in the game. And we have a wonderful, wonderful game of rugby. And I will not let you spoil it, last minute or not.
He has officiated 6 Heineken Champions Cup finals and over 100 matches in the tournament. He has the respect of rugby players and coaches across the world. I'm delighted to be joined today by referee Nigel Owens, MBE. Nigel, a pleasure to have you on the show. How does it feel when you hear that you've refereed a quarter of final matches in what is now the Heineken Champions Cup? What a slice of history you've contributed to already.
Apart from you actually saying that 6 finals, and quite rightly so, yes, I thought you were talking about somebody else for a minute. No, I didn't. I haven't quite finished yet. I hope we have got a season or two left in me, if Joel allows me to carry on refereeing. But I think it's quite like a lot of people, I think. I suppose you don't really sit down and reflect on the past or what you've achieved or what you've been part of, probably more than anything in this case, until you actually hang up the whistle, I think, and then look back, you know, because I haven't really looked back. I've always sort of looked forward to the next game and the next season and haven't really sort of sat down yet. Whether I will, I don't know. Sit down and sort of, you know, think back over all those games and all those years. But yes, you know, they always come up in conversation because people always ask you about them. And it's such a privilege, really, and an honour to be part of this wonderful, wonderful tournament. You know, it really is. It is something very, very special, you know, those European weekends, because that's what it is. You know, you're away from Wales refereeing. You travel the day before the game, referee the match. And we've always had a golden rule, myself and Derek Bevan, who was my TMO for probably nearly all those 100 matches, if not more. We never travel back after the game. We always enjoy, you know, the hospitality afterwards, no matter in what city or country it is. And it is one of my favourite weekends, down to places like Toulouse, Clermont, you know, the old Ravenhill or Kingspan on a Friday night, you know, Thomond Park on a European Cup game is something special, you know, Welford Road then. You know, when Leicester are at the peak, you know, when packed out 24,000, 25,000 in there, it is. It really is something very, very, very special. It is, I got to say.
Nigel, we heard a few short bursts from you at the top of the show there. Communication is such an important part of being a referee, but how have you developed that over the years when it comes to matches in Europe's top competition, top tournaments, with a number of different languages involved with the players, rather like a test match? How has that developed over the years for you?
Yeah, I think you learn, obviously, you know, by the time you get to this level, sort of a lot of your natural ability is what gets you there. And then there are things you learn from. Sometimes you pick up little things from your peers or your coaches. You know, I had Derek Bevan as my coach for many, many years. And then most recently, Dave McHugh. And then, you know, people like Bobby Emmen was my referee manager for most of that period when I was involved in Europe. So you always learn and, you know, look back at games and do your own review and learn to do things better or say things a different way, or, you know, the skills of communication, which is probably one of the most important parts of refereeing really now, especially now in the modern game. But a lot of it will be your natural ability. And I suppose, you know, I was on stage at 14 years of age doing stand-up comedy in the Workingman's Club in Mynydd Cerrig, where I was born and brought up. I was then a member of the Young Farmers Movement, you know, where I was doing public speaking competitions. I was performing in dramas and acting on programs on television and stuff when I was a kid and still until recently and still do now. And, you know, going to Sunday school and go to chapel then and, you know, reading out a hymn and singing individually or as two or three of you in the chapel on the Sunday as well. So a lot of that communication became naturally, really, because I was used to standing up and publicly speaking in front of people. And a lot of it is what happens out on the field. And so a lot of it, I suppose, has come natural, I guess, to me. And you learn to fine-tune things with experience over the years. And But I have to say as well, the language has never been a barrier. You know, I have a huge amount of respect for the French language, the French people, the Italian language, South African, Argentinians, and all the different languages, the Georgians across the world. And Welsh is my first language. English is my second language. And that's it. I don't speak any other languages. But I've never found it to be a barrier. And I'm sure if you ask the players of all the countries, they just want you to referee the game. They don't really care what language you speak, you know, as long as you referee the game well. And I sometimes hear people saying, oh, you know, referees should learn different languages. Where, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, when you referee Japan, referee Georgia, Romania, Argentina, South Africa, France, Italy, you know, Spain in competitions. And, you know, where do you draw the line? Welsh, you know, will people learn Welsh when they're refereeing Welsh teams with a lot of Welsh speakers in it? So, yeah, the communication and stuff and language has never been a barrier, really. And, you know, the players will want the best referees to referee the game. And then they're not really bothered, I don't believe, by what language you speak. So the communication, as you know, different countries, different languages, has never been an issue, really. And that's quite unique about Europe as well. It's such a diverse competition, you know, with so many countries involved, and in the Tier 2 competition part of it as well. Like, I went out to referee an European game in Siberia. So it's a wonderful, wonderful tournament. And the communication, you know, it's just come natural, I guess, from my refereeing side of things. And the language, it certainly hasn't been a barrier in as far as different languages goes.
The European Cup was introduced in 1995. And with the first couple of finals being at the Cardiff Arms Park, there was a real feel that Wales has been, to some extent, the spiritual home of the tournament. You mentioned two gentlemen there who played a big role in those early finals. Dave McHugh refereed the first one between Cardiff and Toulouse. And then the year after, Derek Bevan took charge of the Brive Leicester match, also in Cardiff. What kind of impact did those two have on you when it came to your turn to be the man in the middle of a Heineken Cup match?
Yeah, I remember watching those games, you know. I remember the Cardiff Toulouse game going to extra time, I think it did, didn't it? And I remember watching then the Brive Leicester game with obviously when Derek was refereeing it. And Dave McKay was been a huge amount of help for me over the last couple of years. He started coaching me about a year before the World Cup. And Derek Bevan coached me then from when he finished, and I sort of took his place on the sort of panel in Wales. When Derek finished in 2000, I took his place then on the sort of elite panel, and he was my coach in TMO then for the next sort of 14, 15 years, really, up until about 2015. So, and he was 2016 in Europe as well. And, you know, his advice and support has been something very, very special, really, to me, on and off the field as well. And I learned so much off him and learned so much off McHugh as well, and people like Clive Norling in my early days as well, when Clive was referee manager and was doing coaching with me as well in those first couple of years back in the early 2000s when I was coming into Europe for the first time, really. So yeah, you know, the amount of help I've had off people, in particular Derek Bevan, I wouldn't have achieved what I've achieved today, really, if it wasn't for the support and help of people like Derek and many others like him, and people like Joel as well. You know, when Joel was referee manager of World Rugby, and when I was sort of running touch for Joel back in the European days as well, and before Joel hanged up the whistle. So there's so many people that have, you know, helped and supported you along the way. And that's what's so wonderful about Europe, you know. It sort of pulls all these European countries together. There was the rivalry, of course, but then people, you know, working together, helping each other and, you know, supporting each other. And yeah, I've been very, very fortunate, really, with the help that I've had of so many people.
Obviously, we're celebrating 25 years of what started out as the Heineken Cup, and we're going to go through some of your European experiences. But something that struck me is, I think your Heineken Cup debut was Calvisano against Perpignan in January 2002. Back then, as the game was sort of slowly getting to grips with the spirit of professionalism, and there wasn't the same kind of TV coverage or media coverage as we see today, as a referee, how on earth did you prepare for that kind of experience between Calvisano and Perpignan?
Very similar to the way I prepare now, to be honest with you. I don't really do... When I say I don't do much preparation, maybe that's the wrong way to say it, but I don't sort of rely on footage and clips and stuff to prepare. I do a bit now, you know. I will sit down and you know, look at a couple of scrums before I go into a game from the last couple of games of teams involved or played in. Joel then may have had some queries or something sent through from coaches, which he'll send on then to sort of make you be aware of, or questions that have been raised by coaches or by Joel himself, which is always very, very helpful. But I've always liked to go into a game with an open mind. You know, I have a game plan, and that's a lot of that is my experience, really. You know, nothing changes really in the way you referee the game. The things you can be aware of, you know. But I think it's very important to get that balance right of yes, doing a little bit of preparation, but also going into that game with an open mind that you're not refereeing without any preconceived ideas. So my preparation work on the teams is very minimal, really. And that has held me in good stead over the years. A lot of referees will do a lot of in-depth analysis on teams and actually on individual players within that team. I don't do that. I just have a little general look at a couple of things. I'll watch, you know, a couple of games that they played the week before or something. And if there's something that pops up in that game, you know, I'll make a little note of it and I'll address it with the team and make sure it doesn't raise its head again in the coming match. So my preparation really wouldn't have relied that much on footage. I do a little bit of it, but not sort of overkill on it, really. And I think it is very important that you go into a game with an open mind and referee what's in front of you as well, rather than go in there and think what's going to happen. And or you go in there sometimes and you will be keeping an eye on this player and that player, and then the other player is doing exactly the same thing, but you're not picking it up because you're concentrating on these two players. So it's a very fine balance to get, really. So, yeah, it wouldn't have changed much of my preparation as far as that goes.
Well, two heavyweights of European club rugby and two very recognisable sides coming face to face in a very special stadium to you in Cardiff when you got the nod for the first of your Heineken Cup finals in 2008. Munster Rugby against Toulouse. It was a real thriller in the Welsh capital.
And it's the tap to count down the seconds. Munster, who always know what to do. To overtime, and it's all over, and it's Munster over that line again.
Nigel, it was an incredible atmosphere, but I'd like to take you back to how you found out that you were going to be the Heineken Cup final referee, and how you lived the emotions of that match and managed to handle what was a pretty electric atmosphere in a very special venue to you.
Yeah, it was. The atmosphere was up there with one of the best atmospheres I've ever experienced in not just European rugby, but in test match rugby as well, particularly in the Millennium Stadium or the Principality Stadium as it is now. You know, the way the stadium is built, it keeps that atmosphere in there, and particularly when the roof is shut as well. And you know, I think pretty much everybody who follows European rugby will know that when Munster are involved in big European games, you know, there's a huge amount of support that comes with them, which adds to the atmosphere and the occasion. And obviously, you know, when teams, massive, massive teams like Toulouse are involved as well, and it just goes up another level. So I think Bobby Evan was the referee's man at the time, and he rang to me and said, look, congratulations, you've got your first European final. And I remember him saying to me, don't mess it up because we don't want it to be your last. So I sort of went into the game with that in my mind, you know, thinking, right, okay, don't mess it up now, because I just love the European journey, you know, of all of it. And I think that year, what did I do that year? I think I did, I think I'm actually the only referee, I think, who's I've done something like 27 or 28 or 29 consecutive European matches, because I refereed every single round all the way up to the final in 2008. And I did exactly the same in 2009. And then I did exactly the same all the way up then to the semi-final, referee semi-final in 2010. And I think it was, I mean, Romano or Wayne Barnes, I think, did the final in 2010, I think. So, you know, we continuous week in, week out. And I remember being to Gloucester to do a quarter-final, which was Gloucester against Munster in Gloucester. And, you know, the shed in Gloucester brings that electric atmosphere to it, plus add Munster to the mix as well. Off the atmosphere that evening was unbelievable. And then up in Coventry then for that semi-final then, which was one hell of a ding-dong affair between Saracens and Munster. And then obviously the final itself. So it was one hell of a journey. So when I got to actually doing that final, which my first one, you know, I'd been in pretty pressure situations in a big quarterfinal, a big semi-final, which helped me then prepare and, you know, not to be sort of like a rabbit in the headlights when it came to to that final in the Millennium Stadium back in 2008, and the atmosphere was absolutely unbelievable, and it was a hell of a tough game of rugby to referee, you know. And you know, looking back at it now, you know, what, 12 years ago, it's unbelievable where the time has gone, you know. And but oh no, what a journey that year was.
Have you been able to look back at any of those games? Have you seen them back? And I guess at the time, whilst you're right in the middle of it, how much are you able to appreciate the skill levels that are constantly on show in the European Cup, whether it be from Munster and Toulouse on that occasion, or from Leinster and Leicester the year afterwards in Murrayfield? I mean, how much are you able to gauge that at the time?
Not as much probably as you'd like, to be honest with you, because you know, one of the key things of refereeing is your concentration and your focus for that 80 minutes. And you're concentrating so much on what you have to do. You're sometimes not aware of, you know, you come off a game and people say, well, what a brilliant game of rugby. And it's only when you sit back and do your own performance review afterwards, you then realize, well, this was one hell of a game, you know, or maybe a massive tackle or a skill that you just didn't see at the time. But you do see some things, you know, if a massive hit goes in right in front of you, or, you know, a sublime pass, or, you know, a sidestep by some players beating two or three players and then they're away. You are aware of something up, but you don't really sort of take in all of the game really until you look at it back. And to be honest with you, and as I said earlier to you, you know, maybe I will look back at these occasions and these big matches, some of them, you know, really memorable matches and wonderful games of rugby as well. When I actually hang up the whistle, maybe, you know, because I haven't really, you know, I've looked back at games to do performance review, but you know, when you do the final, then I've never looked back on the final, to be honest with you. So, including the World Cup final, I haven't sat down and watched the World Cup final again since I refereed it live. And the same goes for these European matches. I haven't sat down and watched the finals back. But I certainly will do that. I would think probably, you know, when I do hang up the whistle, if I get time, when we work on the farm. I wouldn't be refereeing if I didn't enjoy it. I just love the game. I love, you know, I don't care. And I remember telling Joel Jute this, you know, he said, Joel, I don't care where you send me, because he was always teasing me. He was going to send me to Siberia to referee, or, you know, somewhere far away. And rather than your traditional sort of, you know, big European stadiums on occasions. And I said, Joel, I really don't care where you send me. I just love refereeing. And And there is no doubt, you know, that I probably will sit down and look back at all of this. But no, at the moment in time, I haven't looked back at those finals. You know, I've looked back at semi-finals, quarter-finals, because I'm doing, when I do my performance review on them. And, you know, it's been good to do that. But you tend to be doing it in a more work-focused than maybe a nostalgic sort of enjoyment feet-up side to it, you know.
Well, as we mentioned at the start, you've officiated and taken charge of six finals in total in the tournament. I just wonder how the tournament has evolved from the first until your most recent, and how you have evolved as a referee and as a professional in that same time. It must be a very different sport now, even to what we saw back in the early noughties.
Yeah, you would, because you were coming out really of an amateur era then, which took a while for people to adjust to, both as players, coaches, and officials as well, and everybody involved. And you know, I remember when my first European trip was to run touch for Paul Adams, who is my referee manager now, actually. He was doing his first European game and I was running touch for him. So that's my first European trip. And Derek Bevan was the other touch judge, and this was up in Oral against Toulon in the, I think, the Shield or whatever you called it back then. And it was very, very different to what it is now. You know, the professionalism has moved on, preparation as referees, you know, your preparation as a team of referees, you know, back then, you know, if we're honest about it, you know, in those early years, you know, people are going away on Europe as a weekend away. You do the game and have a few beers, you know, sometimes even before and after the game. But now it's you know, it is a professional tournament now in more than just the name of it. So things have evolved, you know. It's not a jolly anymore. And I tell all the young referees now, or the referees that go away now, look, Europe is not a jolly anymore. You know, maybe early years, it was people going away to France for the first time ever to a rugby match. And it really has gone up a level. You know, it is, some of those games are test match atmospheres and test match occasions. things have evolved a lot. You know, refereeing has evolved. You know, when you, Joel, who does wonderful work as a referee manager in Europe, and he did the same when he was with World Rugby, he brings a sort of little bit extra and professionalism to him. And then you had Donald Courtney doing it before that, when they brought in a European referee manager then for the first time. So, you know, things have evolved hugely on and off the field. And when you're appointed, it's always been a pleasure and an honour to be appointed to Europe, you know, to referee matches. But when you're appointed now, you know, you know you're in a really top tournament, and a professional tournament at that as well, and quite rightly so.
You've mentioned a lot of people who have been mentors, support, helped you to develop. How much are you aware now that people look up to you, the next generation of referees potentially, but also for many other positive messages that you've given around and about the sport and about life as well? I mean, are you aware of the inspiration that you can bring to others and that you have brought to others over a sustained period?
No, I don't think I am. Nobody's told me that. I haven't thought of it in that way. And whether I am an inspiration to others, then only others can tell you that. But I suppose, yeah, when I was starting on this European journey, you had the likes of Nigel Williams here in Wales and Derek Bevan and all these people, you know, when you're Spreadbury's from England and your Rolands and your Alan Lewis's, these were the people that, you know, when you were involved in games that they were involved in, you know, you were looking up to them. And I suppose, yes, it comes a time, you know, when you're in that position that they were. And I suppose the only downside of that is that you realise then that you're coming to the end of your career, or you're getting old when people start looking up at you. So, and I think that is hugely important in refereeing as well, that, you know, we do pass our experience on, because it certainly is an experience in Europe. It's pressure. There's massive pressure in some of these European games, you know, and we've seen over the years a lot of referees, you know, they go into a European match and they get caught by the occasion and get caught by the intensity of the games. And some of them fall by the wayside and don't recover from it. Others learn from it and then move on. So it is, you know, it is a massive step up, Europe is. And it is important to pass your experience on. And hopefully that I do that when I work with other referees, when they run in touch and stuff for me. And hopefully whatever I do after I hang up the whistle, that I'll be able to contribute and give back as well, you know, my experience to the referees in the tournament and all the other tournaments as well.
Well, you were with us in Newcastle last year to be involved in the whole occasion of delivering the final in a different role with the microphone again in the hospitality section and really helping the enjoyment of the weekend for those visitors to St. James Park. How much did you enjoy being a part of that? Not just that, but your other roles with the microphone in Wales as well, for example, on the television. I mean, how much do you really enjoy that, being around the game?
Yeah, I do enjoy it. I love the game, you know, and I'm not really one for sitting down and analysing the game and, you know, sitting down and watching games and games and games, you know, but I like the occasion, everything that comes with the game as well, you know, and very little rugby I'll watch at home, you know, if there's a big European or a big match on telly and I happen to be home, then yes, I'll sit down and watch it. But I'm not one that will go out of my way to watch games at home. But then I do love the game, you know, the actual being there, whether it be on the field, which is my first love of it, or, you know, in the stadium watching it, or, as you said, you know, involved in whatever capacity it is. So I do enjoy doing the TV work and stuff, and enjoy doing the hospitality. But, you know, I remember Joel Jute said to me last year up in Newcastle, he said, "Nigel, you enjoy this," he said. And I said, "Yes, Joel, but I enjoy in the field more. So don't forget that." So, but, you know, look, there's nothing better than being on that field. Yeah, I know. But I enjoy having the game has given, I can't say the game has given a lot to me. I think the game has given everything to me, really. So it is nice to give a little bit something back, you know, in whatever capacity it is. And it's just not the game. It's the people involved in the game, you know, from your supporters who travel, you know, at a great cost sometimes, you know, in different flights, connection flights from all over Europe to come and support the teams and everybody involved in the game, the players to the coaches to the officials, you know, the administrative side of it and everybody involved. It really, really is a special game. And you can see that in the European matches as well, how special it is for so many people.
I remember being in the tunnel at BT Murrayfield in 2017 for your sixth final. It was also the occasion of your 100th appearance as a referee in the Heineken Champions Cup. I remember that the head of match officials, Joel Judge, presented you with the cap to mark the occasion with 100 on the side. That was one of the great occasions that you've been a part of. But I'm going to ask you the impossible now, Nigel, in terms of European club rugby tournaments. What is the greatest occasion that you've been a part of?
Do you know what? I think that would be it. I would think as far as the quality of the game goes, because that was one of the great finals. You know, I did then Clermont against Toulon in the final in 2015 in Twickenham, which was a great final as well. And so many finals disappoint over the years because of the winning mentality. You know, just win. That's all they want to do, and that's all the supporters want them to do. And sometimes, you know, finals, sometimes, you know, they're not the greatest of finals. The occasion may be wonderful. The intensity of the match may be wonderful. But as far as the actual quality of the games go, finals quite often disappoint. But, you know, I've been very lucky to be involved in a couple of European finals, which have really been up there as far as quality goes in 2016 up in Murrayfield, and then in Twickenham as well, and in 2015. And I remember that the Leinster-Ulster final was a wonderful occasion in 2012, I think that one was in Twickenham, you know, where, you know, Leinster beat Ulster quite well on that day. But the rugby played by the both sides was wonderful. It was a nice, hot, sunny day, and the rugby quality, the skill was phenomenal, even though that, you know, Leinster were quite comfortable as far as the score goes. But I think if you're asking me now about an occasion, and this is up there with my top three or four occasions of all time in any competitions, and that would be Munster against Leinster in Croke Park in Dublin in 2009 in that semi-final. Munster were the big European guns, you know, and Leinster had fallen so short on so many occasions, particularly against Munster, and they just turned up this day.
There's the referee, Nigel Owens of Wales, Nigel Whitehouse and Hugh Watkins, his fellow Welshman, will run the lines. That's it. All the talking over. Friendships parked, battle lines drawn, and the mother and father of family feuds is about to get underway. A place in the Heineken Cup final of 2009 at stake. And Leinster get us underway and Munster under pressure immediately.
The stadium was, 84,500, packed out the world record crowd for a club game at the time. A wonderful, wonderful atmosphere, a nice sunny day. Two teams packed with international class players all over it. And I remember going to the stadium in Croke Park, and it was like an international match day. Dublin was full of blue and red, and what a game it was. One hell of an atmosphere. And that was the coming of Leinster. That was the turning point in Leinster then becoming dominant over Munster and dominant in Europe then for that next sort of decade, 12 years, which had been a huge dominance since, really. And that was the turning point in that game in 2009. But what an atmosphere in the game it was. So that was one of the best European occasions, I think, of all this competition, I think. And there have been so many wonderful ones of them.
Nigel, I was about to ask, with over 80,000 in, do you still get nervous? How do you handle that? And has that changed over time? I mean, that is serious pressure, isn't it?
It is. It's massive pressure. But then that's what you do, I suppose. You know, that's what you're there for. And I think, you know, if you can't deal or live with the pressure, if it affects you, you know, in your performance more than anything, then you're either not going to make it as a top international referee, or you're certainly not going to stay at the top of the game. So there's something in you that allows you to deal with that. You know, some referees deal with it in different ways. Some referees deal with it better. You know, some referees, the pressure gets to them, and then that's when it starts affecting their performances. And so you learn over the years, really, to sort of deal with that pressure, you know, and what you do in your preparation, or how you deal with it, how you deal with something when you make a wrong decision. You know you made a wrong decision. It could affect the outcome of the game, but then you can't let it affect the rest of your performance for that game. So all of these things you learn. And I'm pretty relaxed, really. You know, nothing much gets to rattle me in one sense. You know, I feel the pressure. Of course, when I go into games, I feel the pressure maybe more than a lot of people, or more than anybody in refereeing, because, you know, when I go into games, you know, people expect it to be a certain type of game. Well, Nigel's refereeing today, this is going to be a great game. Well, no, I can't make the game. The players make the game. You know, I can contribute to it. You know, as a referee, you can spoil a good game, but there's no way you can make a poor game a good one. So I feel that pressure, you know. I feel the pressure of maybe by being, and not blowing my trumpet here, but being one of the recognisable names in refereeing. And that comes with extra pressure because there will be people there who can't wait to shoot you down. And so, you know, there's extra pressure on you then when you're at the top of the refereeing tree in one sense. So I do feel the pressure, you know, in many different ways, but it's, you know, something I've accustomed to and learned over the years. And, you know, it doesn't really faze me really, but I do feel it. A little bit like a swan, I suppose. You know, your little legs are paddling like hell underneath, but you're gracefully going over that water, I suppose. And that's one thing I've learned over the years. But look, I think it's quite well known to pretty much everybody who listens maybe to this, is that you know, I've had some very difficult times in my life, and when I look back at those difficult times, you know, refereeing a match is nothing compared to that. So and that sometimes is the way that I look at things really in life, you know, when, you know, I've been through some of the most difficult times that, you know, some people can't even imagine, let alone have been through. And that's, I suppose, is how, you know, refereeing a game is nothing to compare to some of those difficult times in my life. And you never want to go out in that field wanting to make a mistake, or don't care you make a mistake, but you put things into perspective sometimes. You know, if I was going into a game worrying about what happens if I miss a knock-on today? What happens if I miss a forward pass, you know? I know there are some things in life that are more important than a forward pass and a knock-on. That still means you can't go into that game with an attitude of, well, I don't care if I miss a knock-on. No, that's not the way. But you do put things in perspective, really, and that's how I've learned over the years to deal with these, with the massive pressure that comes to refereeing matches.
So conversely, I suppose we can say that the big challenges that rugby has presented has almost helped you in dealing with those sort of more difficult times in life, because it provides some kind of barometer for that perspective. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is, you know, and I've said before in interviews that, you know, rugby saved my life. So it was an outlet at during a very, very difficult time in my life. And for that reason, you know, it contributed hugely to me getting through those difficult times. So, you know, I owe more to rugby and the wonderful people in rugby than rugby will ever owe to me. And that's why I just love the game so much. And this is why, you know, when the time comes to hang up the whistle, I hope it'll be a natural process where I know, you know, yeah, now is time. You know, I'm ready to finish now. The legs are not what they used to be. The performances are not there. And that would mean that the enjoyment is not there. And hopefully it'll be a natural time, and it will become something natural, and I'll just move on to what I'll do next. Because when I do hang up the whistle, when I, you know, that's all I've been doing for 33, 34 years now, nearly, week in, week out, is getting on that field and refereeing a game of rugby, sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5 times a week, you know, in my younger days. So it's been everything to me. And when the time comes to hang up the whistle, it's going to be really strange and probably very, very difficult time. And when people ask me now, you know, how long are you going to go on for? And I say, well, one, a lot of it will be out in my hands with the powers to be. But also as well, I say to them, look, I can't answer you that. You know, if I'm still performing as one of the top referees, if my fitness is as it is now, so I'm able to perform and still put in those performances, you know, I can't answer you. You know, I certainly am not ready to finish now whilst I'm still performing at my best. And, you know, I really did think about hanging up the whistle at the end of this season. And what changed my mind, and I've had another 2-year contract with the Welsh Rugby Union, who've been hugely supportive and who, you know, wanted me to stay on refereeing as well, is the players. You know, the players are asking me the last year, you know, well, you're not finishing you. And I say, well, you know, I don't know what will happen at the end of the season. And they say, and a lot of them have said to me, but why are you finishing? And I thought to myself, yeah, exactly why? You know, rugby has been everything to me, really. So, you know, and I will miss it. I will miss it hugely. But I hope when that time comes, the transition from whistling into something else will happen naturally, without me sort of being a bit down about it and missing it too much, because it'll naturally happen. But you know, if somebody was to tell me now, look, Nigel, you're not going to referee again, then God, I don't know what I'd be feeling, to be honest with you, because I do love the game so much, and the game is, as I said, has given me everything, you know.
Well, Nigel, we've had the real privilege to speak to the legends who've written the history of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup over the last few months on this podcast. I think that most of them if not all, would do a hell of a lot to have the longevity of high-level performance and featuring in the tournament as you have. We know that there's plenty more around the corner as well, which we look forward to enjoying, and we thank you very, very much, sincerely, for taking us back down memory lane with your memories of what is now a quarter of a century of Europe's Premier Club competition. Nigel, thank you very much, and good luck for the next chapter in what is already a glittering career. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Great to hear from one of the most famous referees in the sporting world, Nigel Owens, MBE, on the experiences of over 100 matches in what is now the Heineken Champions Cup and a quarter of its finals to date. Another tournament legend on the way very shortly, so please remember to subscribe and rate our Champions Rugby Show podcast with your favourite provider. We look forward to having your company next time, and we'll leave you with some of the wisest words of a man who's been a referee for almost 34 years and a strong communicator for even longer. Goodbye.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you. Stick to your job and I will do mine. If I hear you shouting for anything again, I'm going to be penalising you. This is not soccer. Is that clear?
Dive like that again and come back here in 2 weeks and play. Not today. Watch it.
Yes, sir.
Well, no need to call me sir. I'm from West Wales.
Well, you can't but enjoy Nigel Owens when he referees a game.
If it's not underneath the foot, the ball will be out. I don't care what it has been. That's
I'm
what I'm telling
this.
You. So listen,
I'm enjoying
please.
This.
I've explained you four times now. I won't be explaining again, OK?
How many times have I refereed you? You don't understand me still? I'll shout louder then, OK?
You don't like the scrummage? But if you don't, you're in the wrong position.
If you don't like scrummaging, you're in the wrong position.
Yes.
I wish there was a quotes book for Nigel Owens.
That is very embarrassing and it is not needed in the game. And we have a wonderful, wonderful game of rugby. And I will not let you spoil it, last minute or not.